Failure is a little part of it. You have to kind of accept that's going to happen. It's a roller coaster ride. So when you're down, you need to like learn to pick yourself back up. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. So you might as well deal with it.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast. I'm so excited about the conversation we're going to have today with Sierra Rogers, who has designed a line of clothes that caters to women of all shapes and sizes, has been worn by the likes of Kim Kardashian, endorsed by Beyonce. This e-commerce store and fashion movement has made waves, over 2 million people, massive following, and millions of dollars in sales. And I'm so excited that we're going to dig into what are the elements that have been put into place that give you this outsider advantage. So Sierra, her whole message was not going through the traditional path. There was ways that she was able to see exactly how to get this done by having this advantage of being from the outside. How can you leverage that yourself when you're going into business and see that some of the things that make you different, unique, might be the exact advantage you need to have the success in your business? Sierra, it's wonderful to have you on the show. Welcome to Selling with Love.
Wow, that was amazing. That was amazing. Thank you. Wow, you really did that. Thank you so much. I feel so welcome after that. Thank you.
I think it's underappreciated, like, because I've sometimes on the receiving end of a podcast, like I get on other shows, and like when somebody does a proper intro, you're just like, hell yeah. And I think your book's coming out, your business is crushing it. You deserve to be recognized. And I can't wait to dig into, my God, you've had a blow up in launching this brand. And, you know, I'd love to kind of take you back to the beginning. You even draft out at the beginning of your book, your journey on how you got to where you are. And it was not the traditional path. And I want you to talk about some of these initial stages.
I felt like I was kind of not forced, but it just kind of, I was pushed into the direction of starting a business because I was broke and I needed to figure out what to do to pay some bills. So I had a natural knack for thrifting just because that's just what I've always known. Like that's all we could afford. That's how my mom kind of flipped clothes when I was younger and made a way. So when I got out here, that's just kind of like where I started thrifting, just trying to pay one bill at a time. And then after slowly kind of putting all of those pieces on Instagram, I just kind of started blowing up from there.
And you kind of mentioned how you've come in from an outsider perspective, and I'd be curious because you are in LA, and then you came in from this path where you started with like thrift clothes to major clothing brand. What are some of the things that you saw being from the outside that got you to kind of start moving in this direction and making it a fashion brand?
So from thrifting, I saw a problem that I wanted to fix, which was there was no clothing for curvy women online at the time that was also affordable, because obviously I was broke. So I wanted to fix that problem. So I think that's how I came from the outsider point of view, is I wanted to fix a problem that I had myself, that a lot of outsiders had at that time.
This is actually something that a lot of people find themselves getting into entrepreneurship, is there's almost like a problem you're trying to solve for yourself. And you're trying to see like, hey, is there a market of other people that are like me trying to solve that exact same problem? Did you have any idea of how big this was going to get when you realized that this was a problem for you?
Nope. I didn't. Not at the time. I knew that we all kind of struggle to find. I just didn't know that there were that many people. At first, I was ignorant to think that it was only Black women. I was like, okay, this is like a Black woman issue, because we're obviously like more, you know, usually curvier on the backside. But then I realized like, this is like a woman issue. This is a world issue. This is much bigger. So no, not in the beginning. I didn't know when I started that it was going to blow up this much. Not at all.
And so when you actually started, because a lot of times in marketing, we're talking about like starting with a niche, and then you kind of see that it can expand beyond that. In your case, did you actually start focusing and speaking directly saying, we're targeting curvy Black women? Like, this is exactly who it's made for? And were you very deliberate in that messaging to attract your initial customers?
No, I didn't do that. I'm glad I didn't. I did not do that. I didn't have like so much of a niche. It was clear that I was targeting curvy women, but I also made it all sizes just because, I mean, not everyone is shaped. Not even everyone's the same type of curvy. So no, I wasn't. I think you should have a niche, but it doesn't have to be so small. And I'm glad that I didn't. Yeah, it's just bigger than that.
I'm just curious because if you're doing this kind of clothes and, you know, it sounds like you're trying to make it accessible, which is, you know, cost efficient, you're targeting something that I would assume maybe isn't hitting the volumes of doing the traditional cuts of clothes. I would assume that there's a lot of expense that comes into trying to customize all these various sizes. Did that become a pressure when you were running the business?
It's not really as much expense as you think it is, which is surprising of why a lot of clothing lines didn't do it. It's really just adding stretch. It's not that hard. Like, that's why it's like, why haven't more brands done this before? I think that that's a cop out. I think that if it's just simply more fabric, then yeah, it could be a little more. But even with babes, I try not to change too much. Like, have you ever been to a website and it's just like tiers of pricing? Like, it'll be like small as this. And then 3X is this. I think if you're smart, you'll just start with how much it is to cost for a 3X. And then you just price it all the same. Like, I think that's a cop out. I think that it is affordable and you can just add a little stretch and it can fit more people.
I've obviously not been doing a lot of shopping myself, but wait, is it more expensive to buy the larger size clothes?
It is. It's more fabric. So like if I have to make a size small versus like making a size 3X, I may use more yardage of fabric. So it is more expensive. But I mean, if you're a true business person, you can make that make sense. It's not that much more expensive that you can't cater to everyone.
Well, even if the fact that you just went and say, okay, let's take the top end one, and then you just set the price the same everywhere, then you got a scalable model. So that makes sense. Yeah. Now, it sounds like you've been able to be very successful as well when it comes to building the media. So obviously, a lot of followers on Instagram, a lot of buzz, a lot of, you know, endorsements from the facts that you have large stars that have worn your products. You've been featured in places like Fox, Mashable, New York Post, New York Journal, and all these publications. When did you start going very aggressive into the PR? Is it something that you deliberately did, or were you outreaching or selling and trying to get these brand deals?
No, it was by accident. So my first, so Kim Kardashian was like my first big celeb that wore my stuff, but she had actually bought it herself. So I didn't reach out to her. I didn't even know how to have access to someone like that. So luckily I got her to reach out to me. But yeah, down the line, I focused on PR, but in the beginning, no, it was just organic. And that was so great about social media back in 2012. Remember when it was organic and you can just put something out there and your followers would actually see it and engage and you didn't have to pay to be seen or, you know, send to people. So it was just easier back then. I wouldn't suggest that now just because like algorithm in the social media and just everyone's just trying to sell and the market is really saturated right now. But I was fortunate enough to begin when I did, when it was just more organic.
You know, they say everything's nice online until the marketers and salespeople get involved and they ruin the platform.
Right. And I don't know what I'm on now, what this app is. It's just like a whole frenzy of stuff.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to you putting out the Outsider Advantage, you obviously went through the labor of putting together a book. And I know how much effort goes into doing that. What was the thing you were most excited about sharing when you put together this book?
Just tips. That's what I really wanted to do at first. It ended up becoming a memoir now, but it started just as a business book. I just wanted a simple business book that had tips for people like me that felt like they didn't have all the answers, they didn't have the look, they didn't grow up in the right family, or whatever it may be. And then it slowly turned into a memoir, which I was kicking and screaming about, by the way, because it's so hard to write a memoir and just deal with it. Like, it may be easy to put it on paper, but dealing with it after, it's like a very personal, very therapeutic. And I've been kicking and screaming along the way. So it's been like a long journey for sure to get to this point.
Yeah, a memoir is kind of a couple degrees more intimate and extracts a part of your soul and puts it on paper.
Yeah. And then you're like, why did I do those things? And why did I do those things again? And why am I still doing those things now? So it's just, I said I learned this lesson, but as I'm writing it, I obviously did not learn this lesson again. So It's a lot on paper. So I was excited about the business part, a little less excited about the memoir part, but I know I'm learning like how important it is to share your story, because it was a dry business book at first. And there's nothing wrong with business books, but I think it could travel further with me sharing my personal story, even though I've been kicking and screaming about it.
Well, I want to dive into that. So one of the things that you've highlighted at the beginning of the conversation is the fact that, you know, you didn't come from the traditional backgrounds. Like, you didn't have wealth that was following you. You actually started from the ground and build this business up. But when you get started in business, oftentimes you need capital and money to get started, and it can become a bit of that catch 22. And so what are some of the things you share as tips when it comes to trying to make money if you're not actually sitting on money to get started with?
I just had a knack for, I didn't come from much, so I'm used to kind of not having a lot. So that didn't really faze me so much. I just kind of was like, I have $10, I'm going to make it $20. I have $20, I'm going to make that $30. I think the small like goals helped me get to where I was. I didn't have any investors, and I didn't really even want any in the beginning because I wasn't confident in what I was doing, to be honest. And I didn't want to involve anybody else in that. So just the small goals helped me along the way build the capital that I needed to get to where I'm at.
Are you seeing a lot of people that you're trying to inspire with your book that might not be following that kind of advice, that are wasting a lot, or maybe they're spending on the wrong things or doing the wrong activities? They have a dream of having this kind of success?
I mean, what I mostly see is people just not start just because they don't have the capital, or they feel like they don't have the answers, or they feel like they don't have this or don't have that. Or people have a great idea and they talk about it all the time, but they never, ever start it. I think that's the biggest problem, is all the excuses. You just have to just start, and then you have to make it work along the way. I mean, that's just a hustler mentality. I mean, that's just how we're built. You just make that stuff work along the way.
So what do you think is the essence of Sierra that existed in you that made it so that you were like, you know what, I'm getting started, I'm going to make this happen, that people should maybe look into maybe nurturing within themselves? Because yeah, there's a ton of people that might be sitting on the sideline, but here you were maybe in a similar circumstance and you said, screw this, we're going forward. What do you think made you have that mindset to start with?
My trauma. I'm afraid of being broke. That is what's guided me along the way. I mean, there's a chapter in the book that says use trauma as your motivator, because that's what I had to do. My trauma of being broke again or not having a home again is so like apparent that it motivates me, and I have to make it work. Like, I have such a fear of going back to the way that I used to be that is what's propelled me forward.
Interesting. Is that what still propels it today? Because I'm going to want to dig on this part, because I have these traumas and things that get me my ass kicked in certain instances, but then I'm wondering if it's actually a sustainable fuel.
I still have it. I was just talking about this earlier. If I have a low sales day, I still have that trauma. I'm like, the jig is up. I'm failing. I'm going to go back to the...
I'm like, damn.
And it's not healthy, but it's going to be there. I don't think it's ever going to go away, honestly. And I don't know if it ever should. I like the little reminder of like where I've been. I don't want to forget that. It's not always a great thing, because on a low sales day, I shouldn't be freaking out about being homeless. But also, like, I use it to my advantage when I can, then there's a balance there. So yeah, I think it's going in a way. Whatever your trauma is, you're just going to have to like move it to the side or try to wrap it up in a bow.
There's a part of me that's like, well, that's probably not what like psychologists recommend. But then there's a part of me that's like, I actually am motivated by very much fears. I'll share something from my side, which is like, as soon as I gain a bit of weight, I get like very negative in the mirror, and I'll be like, you hit the gym and like do something about this, and like make, like, you don't want to become like, yeah. And I get really mean with myself, right? But then it kind of kicks my butt, and then I end up doing like Spartan races and I go running and I lift weights, and then like I'm like, great, I'm back, I like this. And so this works for me.
It's based off of what works for you. If you can do it in a healthy way, as long as you're not always beating yourself up about it. And you know what I mean? Like, it's just a balance. I don't want to give advice. I just know that that's what works for me. My trauma hasn't left me, and it's worked on just like learning how to use it. If it helps you to look.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because even on the money side, like everyone has such blocks when it comes to money. And quite frankly, I've worked with a lot of people that are striving entrepreneurs, and I could see all of the money blueprints kind of coming into play, different kinds of traumas. And sometimes they motivate people towards doing things that actually produce results in the world. And sometimes it just completely paralyzes people. And it sounds for you, you've been in the group where it's like, okay, it's motivated. I bet that all of the richest people on the planet are motivated by some sort of trauma. Even if they're in the millions, billions, and like the rich on the planet, it's like, it's not enough.
I'm going to prove my father wrong.
It's pushing some people. Are you proud now, daddy?
It does. It helps. It's just such a like kick in the ass that we all need. Whatever it is, like, it's kind of like, I'm not going to end up like that, or I'm going to prove you wrong, or I don't know. It works for us.
Do you think there's like an amount that you can have that at that point you're like, okay, now that this is done, the trauma is okay?
Maybe. Yeah, probably. But then there's other traumas. There's like stability. You know, I have a whole package of them. That's just one of them. I think it'll move to the next. It'll move to the next one from there.
Well, I find that it's kind of like, you know, healing in therapy by at least making a ton of money, connecting with epic people, and just call it like moving forward in spite of all of these things. Like, you even have this whole mindset that you talk about in the book, which is around like tackling things that seem impossible. And you have this like trauma as a motivator. But when you see things like maybe you had to break through a new deal, or you're seeing the cash flow is not so good and you're having a bad sales day, how do you respond to these negative things that are happening in, say, the market out of your control? And you're like, oh my God, I need to get back on my feet. Like, what's the energy and the activity that you seem motivate yourself to do in those moments?
I feel like because I built it once, I could do it again. Like, worst case scenario, I've always said, if Babes never makes another dime, I'll sell paper towels, or I'll sell like headphones, or I'll become an audio engineer. Like, I'm just so motivated to not go back to the way. I think that gives me peace, the fact that I know that I could build something, and I hold confidence in that. And that keeps me from going crazy, honestly.
Well, I'll say two things on that. One is funny because I did have a company selling headphones and I lost so much money. It was my first e-commerce thing. I bought way too expensive inventory. I realized how much you need to mark up a product to actually make a profit online. And I just wrote off the whole inventory.
What were you marking it up? Sorry, I'm asking all your business.
Okay, I'll tell you this. I was buying these headphones at like, I think it was around like $30 a pair, and trying to sell them for $100. No, that's not true. They were like $67. Like, they were really expensive.
Okay, I'm about to say, those are okay. Okay, 67, no, that's not going to do anything for you in your life.
No, I had to sell them for $200, but then the quality of what they were, I looked at the market and it was like $120. And I was like, there's not enough margin for me to make even. And so I just wholesaled them. Anyways, that's another story. So if I need to go into e-commerce, I know who to talk to. People, do not listen to me when it comes to e-commerce. Please pick up Outsider Advantage. It's going to be on sale right now. You got to go grab that. Do not listen to Jason Mark Campbell. You will lose money. But if you go into doing this with Babes, you will have, way
so
more
money.
Success. So
thank you for that.
I'll do this though, because I said two parts. So that was one. So I had a bit of a giggle. Two is the fact that you have this kind of surrender mentality. So there's a lot of times I see people having success being very attached to the success they have, and then there's a fear of losing it. And you seem to express this like, you know, at the end of the day, everything's going to be okay and you can rebuild whatever is necessary. How important do you think it is for people to have that kind of attitude when they get into business, to not get so attached to their current idea, which might hold them back?
Because failure is a little part of it, unless you're just so lucky that you're never gonna like make a wrong business decision and you're gonna have amazing sales days and you're just like a perfect person. It's a part of it. Like, you have to kind of accept that's gonna happen, not to be like down. It's a roller coaster ride. So when you're down, you need to like learn to pick yourself back up, because it's inevitable. It's gonna happen. That's my answer. So you might as well deal with it.
Fair enough. And, you know, I know you talk a lot about this whole, like, you know, embracing of failures. Are there any particular failures on the journey of Babes that you think are an interesting story that people could learn from? For those who are just listening, there's a lot of video interaction happening between the lines. So I will highly suggest you go to YouTube so the body language can be understood.
I think my biggest failure is when I started comparing and copying. Not just comparing, but copying. So I had reached a point of success where I had the money, but I felt like I didn't look professional. I didn't look the part. So I started looking at other brands that I thought looked the part, and I literally copied instead of staying true to what got me where I was in the first place. And that has been like some of my lowest sales yet, like my lowest months yet. Those collections and what my brand looked like at that time, it just wasn't what the babe's customer bought into. So I lost myself. So that is like one of my failures that I've learned from. Don't do that.
It's very interesting because I do see people having conflicting advice, but it's not so conflicting. I think there's a nuance because some are like, you know, look at what works and copy it. But then there's this whole like, you have to embrace your true nature based on what are your values and what makes your brand stand out. But I know even on your side, there's areas where you're like, hey, you know, there's opportunities that exist in the system that you can absolutely exploit to get you to, you know, get more market share, to make more sales. And I'd love for you to share more about the times where you can actually take advantage of way things that are set up, or you can copy certain things that are not going to affect the core brand, the look, or the values of the company.
Yeah, because I think that these big brands, they spend a lot of money on research. They just spend a lot of money on everything, on people giving them advice. So I think it's like free education to look at what they're doing, and they're doing it for a reason. Like, there's a lot of people talking and there's a lot of research going into every decision. So I think it's important to look at what they're doing and take note, but just not lose your core. Yeah, but definitely take note of what they're doing. Like, that would be silly not to, if it's working for them.
When you speak about the concept of your core, are there certain activities that you did, or is there something that you recommend people could do to get more clear on what their own core is? Because oftentimes it's like, I don't know what I am. It's not that simple. Like, I need answers. But in your case, is it something that you've deliberately taken the time to step back and kind of define, or is it something you kind of discovered as you go?
They kind of showed me. My customer along the way, they're like my boss. I feel like they're kind of, they've been leading me and they led me into my core. And I just had to embrace that. They're the boss, not me. I didn't decide the core. They did. I gave them things and then they bought certain things and then that became my core. I just kind of follow what they want. I follow what works. It wasn't necessarily my decision. I wish it was, but it wasn't. I would have liked to look more professional, more put together. All of my models are from like four top modeling agencies, but my customer, they just like organic, real women. They like homemade, and homemade sounds bad, but they love that. And I get it because I like it now too, but they had to bring me to that. They taught me to get to that. So that's how it became my core.
I love how you label the customers as almost like your boss. It's almost like you're in a business that's like a servant to the customer. And I think that's an attitude that's probably missed a lot in the industry. I think it's not necessarily about putting the customer on a pedestal, but it's just having that respect for the customer and the role they play in almost the brand self-discovery. I think is something that I admire from the way that you're operating this, because I do agree the customer does actually mirror back to you things that you can take and analyze and really not ignore. Because I've seen the ivory tower style of management. That's not always the best thing. That kind of gets people, you know, thrown sideways. I really, really love this conversation. I found it very interesting in your book. You actually end with something which is just like a one final thing. So if I was going to ask you a final thing when it comes to the message that you want to help people with and you want to share from your book, what comes to you?
Success doesn't look one way. Success isn't even just starting a business. Like, not everybody wants to become an entrepreneur. It's hard, you know, like success for you may be like starting a family or like creating an art group, or I'm just putting stuff out there, but it doesn't have to be what you think it is. And not everyone has to start a business. Like, you can just work your way up in your job. You can, you know, sell headphones if you want or not.
For those just listening in, I am shaking my head and nodding, and I'm saying, no, don't, unless you're really passionate about it. For me, it sounded like it was a good opportunity, and obviously my heart wasn't into it, so.
Yeah, just that success just doesn't have to look one way, like, because not everybody wants to be an entrepreneur, and not everyone should, because it's hard and it's not for everybody. Do whatever success looks like for you.
I love it. Well, I'm going to actually ask you another question. So I feel like I lied and tricked you a bit because there's one question I have to ask. You are on the Selling with Love podcast. So I did want to ask you, Sierra, what does selling with love mean to you?
What I'm doing, kind of. When I looked at the title, because I try not to look at the episodes before I come on because then I have that comparison mentality. So I just don't. And I'm like, selling with love. What is this one? I wonder what he's going to ask me about. It feels like what I'm doing, like, I'm trying to, it sounds corny. I'm trying to make the world a better place. Like, I'm trying to make a difference. I'm not just selling just to get some cash. Like, it actually feels good too. I think that's what it means to me, selling with love. I don't know if that's what this means, but that's what it means to me.
That actually is an amazing answer to that. And I think everything you shared here, I love where your heart's at. I love the business you've built. I love the people that you serve. And I think for a lot of people listening in, you get to see exactly that. When you have the heart in the right place and you have this kind of urge to see a problem in the world be solved, you can actually go ahead, have the courage to go tackle that. I love that we've talked about a few things here. For one, just understanding how your traumas can actually be your fuel. So instead of looking at it as a handicap, you can look at it as your superpower. And I think Sierra's demonstrated how she's been able to do that very powerfully. And so if you're trying to get that momentum to get your butt off the couch and get something done, and that's not necessarily being in entrepreneurship, as Sierra just mentioned, sometimes it's going into your career and just playing all out. Or if it's a health and fitness goal, just going all out as well. But anything that's kind of something you look at as a limitation, look at it instead as an opportunity, because that outsider perspective actually might be the advantage you have to see market opportunities. Now, I love the fact that you've gotten your hands dirty and you really started with the fact that you were actually being thrifty with clothes, and that kind of gave you an understanding of the industry. I think when you're going into any kind of industry, it's great to have that kind of on the ground knowledge and being able to work your way into understanding the market and scale it from there. Giving a parallel example with my headphones, I didn't have my hands very dirty and that was a failed venture. So definitely listen to Sierra on this one. I also really, really appreciate the fact that you didn't start with trying to get the perfect marketing and the perfect PR, but just the fact that you were pursuing the business with a great mission, a goal of wanting to serve, you were able to become very, very attractive in a world that there's so much polished marketing and sales. You had some of the biggest influencers come to you organically because they saw how you organically were putting the business together. So I think this was a jam-packed episode filled with lessons. Sierra, thank you so much. For everybody tuning in, we are releasing this episode in parallel with the release of the book. Definitely go pick up a copy of The Outsider Advantage. We'll have a show notes link available for you, and you'll be able to go deeper. There's so many more business tips that are through that, and you'll get to go through it as a memoir as you go through the journey of Sierra's life, how it's not a common path, and neither will yours be. Thank you so much for tuning in. And with that, go out there and keep selling with love.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.